Hello and welcome to the Practice Drill Podcast, episode 40. Wow, the big 4-0. This week, we talk about the NBA Conference Finals, only four teams left. Then we talk about the big news of Australia securing the Rugby World Cup in 2027-29 for the women's, and then the Broncos. I know that I was high on them making the top eight, but they're in the top four after Thursday night's victory over the Newcastle Knights. And similar to last week, we finish off with our new segment, the Quick Fire Round, as we discuss a few of the big topics that, you know, we just want to touch on. Can't dedicate a full segment to it. Shout out to Centro for providing that killer intro and introducing my good mate, Blaze McKee. Mate, we're over Zoom once again. A bit of a flu going around at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. I think everyone's a bit affected by the flu at the moment. Obviously, you know, we both had some big weekends, so maybe that played a little factor. But yeah, we're still getting it done and getting this out to the people.
Yeah, and I was saying, I was saying to someone yesterday, that's kind of crazy with this flu. You know, people don't have COVID, but now after, you know, 2-3 years of COVID, people either think you're well or you've got COVID. So it's just been really interesting now with this flu that, you know, it's a little bit of the norm that we just haven't had for a few years. But Blaze, past week of sport, what have you enjoyed? It's been there's been a lot going on.
Yeah, there was. I think we spoke about Magic Round last week and I really enjoyed it. I think although it was rainy, there were some really good games of rugby league and there was also plenty happening off the field, which always makes the rugby league a bit more interesting.
Yeah, it was a great weekend there up in Brisbane. But guys, if you'd like to follow us on Twitter, the handle is at @T_practicedrill. At the moment, myself, I'm loving this NBA playoff run that we're seeing, and we'll get into it just in a second. But I've been commenting, posting a lot about it, so go and follow us there. But Blaze, let's get straight into it. And as I said, we're talking about the NBA Conference Finals. Only four teams remain. In the West, it's the Golden State Warriors. They're finally back in the conference final for, I think it's the sixth time in 9 years, 8 years, something ridiculous. Dallas Mavericks back there, which no one saw happening. And in the East, it's the Boston Celtics and the Miami Heat returning to the conference finals. And we'll start off there in the East, Boston and Miami. It's been a good matchup. We've only seen one game. And just a heads up, we're recording this as game two is being played. So it will just be a little bit delayed by a game there. But currently, Miami holding a 1-0 lead. And Jimmy Butler was special there in game one, wasn't he?
Yeah, definitely. We talk about those big players standing up in the playoffs and he definitely did it. I saw him walking off the court and he had some words to say, I think, about some teams letting him go in the past. And he was definitely, yeah, ready to, I guess, prove how good a player he was throughout that series.
Yeah, and I've seen a lot of people talking about how Jimmy Butler kind of coasts through the regular season. And unfortunately for Miami last year, maybe just the short turnaround after the bubble season is they just never really got things going. But this year they've been red hot, number one seed in the East, and now they have home court advantage in the Eastern Conference Finals. And Jimmy Butler, all playoffs has been amazing, but particularly in game one, finished with 41 points. Remember, this is a guy that doesn't shoot many threes. He's very old-fashioned, loves the mid-range game and getting to the hoop. 9 rebounds to go along with it, 5 assists. And on top of that, usually we only focus on those three statistical categories, but we had to mention 3 blocks and 4 steals. So doing it on both ends, it was, as you said, it was a spectacular performance by him. But what about on the other side? What do you think about Jason Tatum's game?
Yeah, he's been pretty incredible, I guess, throughout the whole playoff series. He's a young guy that probably goes a little bit under the radar, I think, when you compare all the big superstars of the league. But he's really shown that, I guess, he is in that top probably echelon of players. And I think he's going to have a really big series if the Celtics are going to get through past the Heat.
Yeah, he's going to need to stand up big time. And game one, he had an okay game, but he struggled from deep, going 2 of 9. He really does like to settle for those threes at times. You'd love to see him just blow by the defender and get to the rack, but still finished with an impressive 29 points, 8 rebounds, 6 assists. His passing has improved out of sight, and also matched Jimmy Butler with 4 steals. But as you said, sometimes Jason Tatum flies under the radar, but I do think sometimes he kind of excels and people start overestimating him a little bit. And there's been a lot of debate about him arguably being better than Kevin Durant at the moment, Jimmy Butler, Luka Doncic, and even Steph Curry. I'll give my opinion first on this. I think it's a bit of a joke. I also do think that Boston Celtics are similar to the Lakers in their, they're an old team. They have a big fan base. So when you have a player playing for them and playing well, they get a lot more attention than other players deserve. And although Miami is one of those teams that, you know, from LeBron and Dwayne Wade, they do have a good following, but like Jimmy Butler is a better player than Jason Tatum. And I don't think you can tell me otherwise. So I do think it does get a little bit offensive. Like Kevin Durant, he's a multiple-time champion and MVP. At the moment, I thought he had a pretty good season, a little bit of injuries. And Luka is definitely better. And Steph Curry has one of the greatest resumes in the basketball, in the NBA at the moment. So that's my take. What do you think? Do you think Tatum is better than some of those players?
I'd probably have to agree with you, particularly, I guess, on the body of work point. I mean, you look at those guys on that list, they've been in the NBA for a number of years now and done it for a number of seasons. And Tatum's obviously still a young player. So, you know, we might look back in 10 years and say, yeah, he is in that list. But definitely at the moment, he's still, I guess, pushing to join those guys.
Yeah, he is only 24, so very, very young. But I think Luke is definitely someone who I think is younger and I would say is a better player. But yeah, so it's just going to be interesting. I mean, if he makes the NBA finals, you know, my tone could change. Everyone's tones could change. But we'll jump over to the West to finish off here. Warriors lead 1-0 after a huge blowout win over the Dallas Mavericks, 112-87. Over the last week, we had a couple of game sevens where Boston defeated the Bucks. And then in the West, we had Dallas with the huge upset beating the runners-up of last year, the Phoenix Suns, there in the West. And Luka Doncic put on a show. It was even crazy. Phoenix finished with 27 points at halftime. Luka Doncic had 27 points at halftime. So just shows how dominant he is. But they were no match for the Warriors. Seven players for Golden State were in double figures. And after a hot start for Doncic in the first quarter, he really did struggle scoring, finishing the game with 20 points, which for most players is good, but for Doncic's standards, definitely below par. But Blaze, just to wrap up, your predictions in the East, I'll start off. Who do you think's winning that series between Boston and Miami?
I'd probably have to go Miami. I think they've been the best team all year. And I think it's going to be interesting, you know, when we move over to the West as well, that extra game in the semifinals, I think it has a really big effect when it comes to the finals. Obviously, the Heat and the Mavericks had to play seven games, the Warriors and the Celtics only six. So I think that might come back to bite those two teams.
Yeah, it is handy to get that extra rest late in the season. For me, I'm on the fence, but I'm going to go Boston. I think they run deep on the bench. I think they have a lot of scoring options. And I think, you know, it was a good game one win for Miami. They did have to fight back, and it took Jimmy Butler scoring 41. And I just don't think Butler, I don't think many people can score 40 points every night. So if that's what they're going to hang their hat on, they might be in for a bit of a shock when Boston make those changes defensively. What about in the West, Golden State and Dallas?
Yeah, I kind of, I guess, gave it away a bit early, but I think the Warriors, you know, they obviously had that extra game, but I also think their game style is just too difficult to match up against. As you spoke about, they spread their scoring around a lot, and they still have those guys like Steph Curry that can take a game over if necessary. So, yeah, I just think they're a bit too hard to handle.
Yeah, I've got to agree with you there. Golden State, they look too good. And the fact that they're splash bros, if anyone pays attention to the NBA, Klay Thompson and Steph Curry, the thing that they can go 0 of 10 to start the game shooting, and then all it takes is 1-3, and any team goes, oh my God, we're in for it now. And they just flick a switch. And I don't think there's many teams that have the luxury of having players that can do that, let alone multiple players for Golden State. So, yeah, got Golden State. So at the moment, bit mixed in the East, but we're on the same page there in the West. But we'll move on to topic number two. And I know you big, big rugby union fan. This is huge. So the World Cup coming to Australia in 2027 for the men, and the women's one will be held in 2029. Not only is this huge for rugby in Australia, but it's also huge for Australia just to have a big sporting event. We've got, you know, Commonwealth Games and, you know, hoping to get, you know, Cricket World Cups and Soccer World Cups in the future. But it's great to have the Rugby World Cup come back and maybe lift the Aussies to maybe winning it all.
Yeah, we'll see. I definitely have got my fingers crossed. I think in 2003, we obviously had a pretty successful Rugby World Cup. And unfortunately, Johnny Wilkinson's drop goal meant we finished second in that tournament. But you know, history shows that the hosts definitely, you know, get a boost at their own World Cup. And I think it's going to be really big. I mean, as you say, these worldwide events are, for any sport fan, whether you follow rugby union closely or not, are great events. And I know Australia will definitely get behind it, especially if the Wallabies are going well.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right. And to your point about, you know, even if you're not a rugby union fan, you know, you watch these World Cups. The thing that I can relate to that is you know, the Soccer World Cup. Now, I'm not a big soccer guy myself. I know you aren't as well, but just the spectacle and the fact that so many people around the world are paying attention to this makes you want to watch it. And I think that's very similar. I think under the Soccer World Cup, I'd have to say the Rugby World Cup is the second best in terms of, you know, the whole world is there watching it. It's definitely a global sport. So very impressive. To secure that, but Australia did beat out Argentina, Russia, the USA, and South Africa for it. I touched upon it before as well. Aussies love their sport, whether it's Olympics, you know, Commonwealth Games. We'll get behind it. It'll be a huge boost for Australia. But what about the next World Cup cycle? Is there going to be extra emphasis for the Aussies on making sure that they're at their best that they've been in maybe a couple of decades for this World Cup?
Yeah, I think we've spoken about it before, but success is really important in Australian sport. Because we have so many options and teams to watch, we tend to pick the ones that are doing well. So I think it's really important that the Wallabies, I guess, do well at 2023, first and foremost. That's obviously the next World Cup in France, and then keep trending up. But having said that, I think, you know, we have seen some positive signs from the Wallabies in the last few years, and I think they are moving in the right direction. So hopefully that trend continues, and by the, you know, by 2027, we'll be up with the world's best.
And I guess on the women's side, it's an important boost for them as well. We saw how well they did in the sevens union at the 2016 Olympics. So I guess this is another huge boost for women's rugby in Australia.
Yeah, I think women's sport in general in Australia is in a really, you know, exciting place. Obviously the women's AFL, NRL, Super Rugby, those sports are really growing, and hopefully this World Cup can attract some more money to rugby union in Australia for women, and hopefully attract some more players as well to play. I think they're probably falling behind a little bit at the moment, particularly to the rugby league, and then I think AFL is doing it the best at the moment in terms of the women's game. So yeah, hopefully this brings some much needed attention, and they've actually got a World Cup at the end of this year. So hopefully, as we say, they can do well there and then continue to build for 2029.
Now, I'm sure some people remember we were only 2 years old when this happened, but back in 2003, we saw rugby league players shift over into union, namely Matt Rogers, Wendell Saylor, and, you know, they were really good rugby union players as well. Do you think with the World Cup returning back to Australia, we could see some of the NRL's best who have like a union background, a Suwali, an Angus Crichton, maybe a Will Penasini, jump ship over to the Wallabies?
Yeah, obviously it's still a long way away, so it's hard to tell right now. But I think that rugby union, rugby league switch is a lot harder than people think. Particularly we've seen in the past, it works probably better for outside backs. You know, you look at Israel Folau, you spoke about Wendell Saylor and Matt Rogers there, where the skills are a bit more transferable, obviously your wing fullback type guys. A guy like Angus Crichton could be really interesting. Obviously, he was a schoolboy superstar coming through Scots College. But once you go into the forward pack of rugby league, the skill set changes completely. And we've seen that, you know, with Sam Burgess, a guy who really, really dominated the rugby league game. He went to rugby union. He couldn't quite, you know, get those different skills, because obviously the game's quite different. So it's definitely a space to watch and a really interesting one. But I think sometimes people do underestimate the differences between league and union and how difficult it is to swap between either of them.
Yeah, well, that's actually really interesting, because you'd say like it's a similar but different sport. And I guess even when you look at the forwards alone, sometimes the union forwards are a lot like bigger in size, and that allows for, you know, the more wrestle that's in the game and needing to actually force your way through. Whereas in rugby league, you're usually chopped down pretty much immediately when you get there. And it's all about being agile enough to get back to your feet and get those quick play the ball. So you do need to alter your body. And I guess that's really the hardest adjustment before even adjusting your skill set. It's about getting the right body to play the sport. But really exciting there for the Aussies, and I can't wait to see, you know, a huge spectacle like that come to Australia. It's going to be very exciting. Now we'll move on to our third topic, and I boasted about it in the opening segment. I said the Broncos were going to make the eight. I was strong on it to the point where, shout out Doof Dawn, put a bet on it with him, $50. We won't talk about the other one that I'm currently losing. But that's the one that I'm winning. And the Broncos find themselves, after their 36-12 win over Newcastle, in the top four. And also, as a Queensland fan, two Queensland teams in the top four. So shove that up your New South Wales. So five wins in a row. They've beaten a couple of lower teams, and then three teams that are up there, you know, as a top eight contender. So they beat the Dogs, the Sharks, the Rabbitohs, Seagulls, and Knights, which was last night. Not only was it impressive to see them beat the Knights 36-12, but magic round 38-0. Shout out Hello Sport boys. They've been amazing the last couple of weeks. And even to think last night, no Adam Reynolds. What did you think of their performance?
Yeah, first, I guess we'll just say it's unfortunate for you that the Titans aren't one of those two teams in the top four. And it's funny, over these 40 episodes, you know, you keep saying you're a Titans fan, but the rhetoric is getting more and more towards the Brisbane Broncos. But we'll let it slide. You're obviously a big Queensland fan. I thought the Broncos have looked pretty impressive the last, you know, as you say, five rounds. And even from the start of the season, they struggled a bit at the start. But I think you can see the impact some of those guys have had. You know, Adam Reynolds was obviously out last night, but he's had a huge impact there. And also Kurt Catewell was very good. And it's really allowed some of the younger players, I think we'll get into it, you know, Selwyn Cobbo was outstanding last night. Unfortunately, you know, shout out to the Cabby Cabby Warriors. Sean Appa has him in his fantasy team, and I don't. And he's looking very good to start our matchup off this week. But yeah, they were really impressive last night.
And yeah, shout out to the Cubby Cubby Warriors coach. Just got COVID, so rest up. I know he listens. But yeah, as I said, no Adam Reynolds. It took him about 40 minutes to adjust to that last night. But in the second half, they really clicked into gear, ran in, I think it was 30-6 there in the second half, where it was 6-6 in the first 40 minutes. Then now 3 or 5 wins at home, beating the Dogs, the Sharks, Manly. So maybe Suncorp Stadium starting to become the fortress that I guess you want. You know, you want your home ground to be, you know, an advantage for you. Some teams like, you know, my struggling Gold Coast Titans allow teams to come into CBUS Super Stadium and run over them. So, yeah. It's really good to see a side that struggled for a couple of years. And look, I just want to put to bed, I'm a Queensland fan. I'm always going to support my Broncos, my Cowboys, my Titans first of all over any team. And because their feeder clubs are in Queensland, the Melbourne Storm. So, you know, gotta at least support them to play well. So, you know, a couple of those sides, bar the Titans, are making their home ground a fortress, and that's really important. But you touched upon some of the younger players emerging, and Selwyn Cobbo, but also Farnworth out in the centres there. Although he's played a couple seasons, I think this year he's really stood out for me. Just does a lot of tough carries out of their red zone, and becoming quite a well-known player in the league. And then Paddy Carrigan in the forward pack. Just the 1-2 punch of him and Payne Haas is something that's a luxury. And I think they're utilizing them both really well. And I think Pat Carrigan might be in for an Origin selection. So good luck, New South Wales, dealing with him. But what do you think about Adam Reynolds? What do you think you've seen? Because obviously it's been a drastic turnaround. I think they finished 14th or 13th last year, the Broncos, last the year before that, and now they're in the top four. And really have to put it down to Adam Reynolds returning. Oh, not returning, but coming to the club. What do you think he's brought to the Brisbane Broncos?
Yeah, as you say, it's probably a lot of belief, and it's probably no coincidence that a guy like Adam Reynolds has come and all of a sudden these young guys are starting to, I guess, really show what they're worth. And someone like that is probably, you know, he's pretty invaluable to the whole club. Even as we say, he didn't play last night, but you could still see, I guess, his impact on the team. They were pretty confident to still go out there and play footy, whereas in the past, you know, they might have fallen away after that first 40 minutes where they struggled to get on top. And unfortunately, as well as Lachlan Lilias has been playing at the Rabbitohs every week, Reynolds plays and really dominates. I think it shows that decision was a pretty bad one from the Rabbitohs and a pretty good piece of business from the Broncos.
Well, their next three games, they've got the Gold Coast Titans, come on Gold Coast, and then they've got a bye and then the Raiders. So a winnable period coming up to extend upon their 5-game win streak, although the Titans will end it next week. But they are, if you think about it in the context of the rest of the league, very winnable games. But we'll move on to topic number four, the quick fire round. Second week in a row we're doing this. If you missed last week, it's a new segment that we're doing where we quickly talk about a few topics in the sports that we cover. We'll fire a question out to one another. The other one's just got to respond, give their take on it, and then we'll move on to the next. So I'll start, Blaze. I'll ask you a question. And I know you've always had a soft spot for the GWS Giants, but Leon Cameron coached his last game for GWS over the weekend against Carlton. Do you think he had a successful stint there?
Yeah, it's a very interesting topic. I think if you look at his tenure on the macro level, I think he was quite successful. You know, took over there in 2014 when the club was still relatively new and probably struggling quite a bit. Coached 193 games and won 101. So I think that's a bit of a surprising stat. I think, you know, I certainly thought that there would have been some more losses in there. But obviously they didn't get the title that they would have liked. But I think from where that club started and, you know, how difficult it was in those early days, I think ultimately he's had a pretty successful stint. And I think he, you know, built quite a good culture and a real club that people wanted to play for there.
Yeah, well done, Leon Cameron. All right, fire a question at me.
Move over to the basketball. Kyrie Irving is set to lose his shoe deal this year. Do you think it's worthy given the massive, I guess, media and attention that it has gotten and he is attracted this year?
Yeah, I think the focus on the shoe deal probably doesn't need to be chucked out there. I know NBA and American sports kind of treat sponsorships and contracts a little bit differently to how we do in Australia, where we want to kind of keep it under wraps. Over there, it's all out in the open. I do think, though, Nike is setting a good precedence where he didn't play many games this year. He was against, you know, COVID protocols and getting vaccinated. And I think Nike want to lead from the front and tell people that, you know, you've got to get vaccinated. You've got to do all the right things around COVID. So I think they've gone, look, I think they're releasing his 9th signature shoe coming up in a few months. And then after that, they're discontinuing him with Nike. So I understand why it's got the massive media attention. I just think it's probably something that can be kept out of the limelight. It's just someone's shoe deal. It's not a big deal. He'll probably find another company to take him in. But all right, staying on the topic of the NBA, Blaze, Patrick Beverley was on some of the ESPN shows early this week and made some big comments about current players. So I want to ask you this question. Do you like that style of commentary, kind of coming after players? And do you think more current players should be involved with the media?
Yeah, I've got to say, I did enjoy it. I found myself you know, watching those clips and laughing quite a bit. I think Pat Beverley's obviously got that he's synonymous with those sort of actions on and off the court. And I would like to see some more current players, I guess, do that. But it's one of those things, it's probably up to the player. And I think, you know, Pat Beverley's the type of guy that's he's ready to take any slap back from, you know, we saw some other players, you know, respond to it. And I think on the court, he's ready to walk the walk for the talk that he talks. So I do like it, but yeah, it's up to the player. If they want to talk the talk, they're going to have to go out there and probably cop it a bit from the other players.
100%. What you got for me? What's the final question?
Well, we started with an AFL coach losing his job, and we'll move on to the NRL. Obviously, Trent Barrett resigned during the week. There was a bit of, I guess, speculation whether he was given the tap on the shoulder by the Bulldogs, but he's no longer in his job. And do you think it was the right call from him for the Bulldogs moving forward?
1,000%. 1,000%. He might be one of the worst NRL coaches of all time. When he took over from Des Hasler, remember, Manly were in a pretty good spot, and he drove them into the ground, ruined the salary cap. And now he's gone to the Dogs, and, you know, a lot was made about his signings of outside backs. And look, I understand that the team's looking better than how it was last year, and it will only get better with, you know, Kickout coming there next year. But again, they're last on the ladder. So even after trying to form the team that he wanted, you know, the Bulldogs gave him this money to go out and sign players. He did that and he wasn't getting results. And there's been a lot said that maybe Phil Gould said, look, if you can't beat the Knights, you can't coach the Dogs. Now, that's all speculation, but very interesting. And I think 100% it was the right call from him to step away for the betterment of the Bulldogs' future. But that will do us. The quick fire round done and dusted. Another episode of the Practice Shield gone. Blaze, it's Friday, so we've got a weekend of footy ahead. What are you looking forward to the most?
I'm actually looking forward to the basketball over the weekend. Obviously, not the biggest basketball fan during the season, but I do love, you know, as it gets towards the pointy end and when we see some of these, you know, real matchups that we've been waiting for all season. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how some of those conference finals play out.
It's going to be very exciting. And obviously a new champion will be crowned this year. So that's also added excitement. I've got to agree with you, but I'm looking forward to the Titans game against the Sharks on Sunday. Got to get up for it. Got to win that game. It's crucial. Especially with a couple of injuries for the Sharks. So I'm looking forward to that. But otherwise, go and follow us on Twitter at @T_practicedrill, and we'll talk to you next week.
See ya.